Welcome to Between Two Ovaries, your go-to for all things women's health.
A lot of people just say like, oh, my vagina.
Yeah.
And yes. That's
not your vagina.
No.
Well, it is.
We're here to cut through the confusion, bust some myths, and give you the facts straight from the experts.
You cannot still believe the amount of people that come to a gynecology clinic saying that they don't look right down there and they need something doing about it.
We're keeping it real, bringing you honest conversations about topics that matter to you.
Everything goes back to the menstrual cycle.
Yes. It's a low-risk procedure, but it's not a no-risk procedure.
From periods to menopause and everything in between, we've got you covered.
So whether you're here to learn, laugh, or just listen, you are in the right place.
As soon as I said it.
So, early pregnancy. We thought we'd do a little episode on this because it can be a minefield. I feel like so many people these days have done a pregnancy test before the period is actually due, and it makes it quite difficult. It makes your pregnancy very long to start off with. And we're going to try and talk through what happens in those early stages, what can be normal, what's abnormal, and try to offer some guidance to people.
Yeah, and it follows on nicely. We did our episode on how to get pregnant.
Yeah.
And then this is the normal early pregnancy, what to expect if you are pregnant and what to consider. Firstly, one of the most important things that we wanted to get across is folic acid. So if you're firstly trying to get pregnant, then it's the best supplement for you to be on. The only one that there's really any evidence that it actually improves anything. So the reason you should be on it is because people can get neural tube defects, which is where when the baby's forming the spine, it sort of starts open and then eventually closes during the pregnancy. And if you have low folic acid, then there can be problems with the spine closing, and you can get something called spina bifida, which you might have heard of.
Oh yeah.
Or a range of neural tube defects. So folic acid is brilliant, so that helps to prevent neural tube defects. So the advice is, if you're trying to conceive, take a 400 microgram, so a tablet you can buy over the counter in various places.
Anywhere.
Or if you wanted to be taking like a prenatal supplement with other things in, you can often find something like Pregnacare or other brands will have folic acid in it.
Yeah.
That's just the one that everyone's always on.
I was going to say, I swear I've seen that advertised on the back of the buses.
But, you know, start that when you're trying, and ideally you want to be on that for about 3 months before you actually get pregnant, and then carry on taking it throughout the pregnancy, at least until you've done the first 12 weeks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Some people would need to be on a higher dose of folic acid. We're really pushing this because I feel like Naomi will want us to push this.
Shout out to Naomi. Because we didn't mention it in an episode. I think it was how to get pregnant. We didn't mention folic acid,
so we're pushing
all
it with
be
this
taking
one.
Folic acid.
Some people will need to be on a higher dose if you're on specific medication. Usually people that have got epilepsy are on specific medications that would mean that they would be need to be on a higher dose of folic acid.
Or if you have a family history of neural tube defects.
Or if, if you've had a baby yourself,
or if you've had
defect. So there are various people. So if anyone's ever mentioned to you higher dose folic acid, you can have that prescribed. It's very straightforward.
Okay.
But yes, be on folic acid.
Be on folic acid.
Yes.
I saw your little hand go up there.
You find out you're pregnant.
Yeah.
You weren't necessarily trying, but you're happy, you want to keep pregnancy going. Start folic acid as soon as you can. Just
good
check.
Point. No, very good point.
And it's not the end of the world that you haven't had it 3 months before.
It's not the end of the world, but be on it if you're trying to conceive. And I think obviously sometimes people fall pregnant and they weren't specifically trying to conceive, but there is a lot of people out there that are tracking cycles, know where they're up to, want to conceive, so do the best you can, be on folic acid. The other things you can try, we always talk about being the best version of yourself, and it's not because we're like everyone's got to be the best version of themselves because of we want everybody to look the same or we need everyone to be the same weight or that kind of thing. It's because we know fundamentally that if you're a healthy BMI and you've got a healthy diet, then you've got a greater chance of getting pregnant and a lower chance of miscarriage. So do that for your potential pregnancy. It's not anything else. It's because we want you to be able to have a healthy pregnancy. Smoking, massive
stop
one
smoking.
As well.
Please
stop smoking. Don't
smoke
as well.
Yes, it does apply to both. I think we're probably more talking about from a female perspective.
But it can help. But it does help. It harms sperm. So, yes, stop smoking. Yeah. And it has repercussions post-pregnancy as well. So if you have a baby and you're smoking in the house, you're at more risk of sudden infant death syndrome. So, you know, stop smoking because it is no good for anybody.
Definitely. Like, if you're thinking about getting pregnant or you are pregnant, stopping smoking is probably the best thing you can do if you're a smoker to help you have a healthier pregnancy.
With a higher weight, if people are carrying extra weight, it's not just miscarriage they're at risk of. They're at risk of preeclampsia, so that's your blood pressure going up in pregnancy. You're at risk of gestational diabetes, so being diabetic in pregnancy, which, I mean, kiboshes a pregnancy as well, because although we say don't eat for two, it means that...
You said a word that Lana does not understand.
Like ruins your pregnancy a bit. You're like, what does that mean?
Kibosh
your pregnancy.
I've never heard that.
I actually don't think I've ever heard it, but I understood it in context.
It is a bit like sabotage because...
I've never heard that word.
So is this a Yorkshire term?
It might be.
Is it like treat and tret?
No, it's not like tret.
No.
Okay. You said tret before.
Yeah. So it's just, while you're pregnant, we'd say not to eat for two, but you might want to be like, you know, have a little afternoon tea, treat yourself. And if you're diabetic while you're pregnant, we'll be like, cut out all those sugar. Like, it'd just be rubbish.
Yeah.
So
avoid that.
Yeah, avoiding, if possible, by being the healthiest version of yourself before you become pregnant.
And if you do, as Lorna said, find out that you're pregnant and you weren't actually trying and you want to continue with the pregnancy, and then all of these changes are still relevant to pregnancy. Okay. So, you know, try and eat healthily, try and maintain, maybe don't lose weight, a healthy weight. And as Nick said, it decreases your chance of kind of all pregnancy complications. Mm, so any medical conditions that can affect pregnant women tend to reduce if you're healthier, if you're a healthier BMI and you have then you're not smoking. But it also can make your labour easier as well. So you're more likely to have a complicated labour if you're overweight, and if you have high blood pressure or diabetes, all of these things feed in. So yeah, it's good advice. If you can do it, take it.
In life and while trying to get pregnant.
Yeah. Okay, so if you wanted more info on how to get pregnant, go find our previous episode.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So if we move into the early weeks, 0 to 4, so you might not know it, but you've had unprotected sex, you've got pregnant, you're happy, you want to keep... What's happening? What's going on?
What's going on inside your uterus?
So you find out you're pregnant, and actually, if you find out you're pregnant on the day of your missed period, so if you have, for example, a 28-day cycle, we'll go with normals. So if you have a 28-day cycle, and on that 28-day cycle, it's a Saturday, and you wake up, and your period doesn't come, and you take a pregnancy test, and it's positive, then you are actually 4 weeks pregnant.
Right, we've been through this maths before, haven't we? It's still confusing.
It doesn't matter. Yeah.
So it's because, so day zero really is the end of your last cycle, I suppose. So you know how we date periods by day one is the first day of your period. Mm-hmm. And if you have this normal 28-day cycle, which most women don't, so don't worry if you don't. Yeah. But just for making the point, day 14 would be when you ovulate. Mm-hmm. And then that egg gets fertilised if you are having unprotected sex. And then implants. And then week 4 or day 28 would be when you get your first missed period.
Okay.
Right? Mm-hmm. But you're 4 weeks pregnant by that point.
Okay.
Purely because that's the easiest way to accurately date a pregnancy, because we don't all know when we ovulate. Most people don't ovulate on day 14. Most people are not doing ovulation tests to know when they ovulated. So you could have ovulated at any random point in that cycle.
It's hard to know which day you actually
conceived. Yeah. But you do know really when your last period was, because there's a way of telling, because you can see the period.
Yeah.
So it's like a way of sort of standardising how we like date a pregnancy. Mm-hmm. But it does seem kind of crazy that means that week one, you hadn't even released an egg. Yeah. Do you know? It just sounds quite confusing.
You haven't had sex until the end of week 2.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, like, I mean, you're not pregnant, but you are pregnant. Like, it makes no sense.
In hindsight, you were pregnant.
Yeah.
But it is like crazy. And in a way, it's quite nice, because by the time you find out, you're like, 4 weeks done.
What's that, 10% to wait for?
Yeah. I was going to do it and I couldn't figure out the maths.
Oh, 10%. It took a minute then.
You were right. You were quite right.
So it's that Saturday. We woke up, no period. Pregnancy test, positive.
Yeah.
What do we do
now?
Well, we should talk about what is happening in those sort of 3 weeks before, two weeks before. So mid-cycle, around day 14, you are releasing an egg.
Yeah.
So that egg travels down. So it comes out of your ovary, which is next to your fallopian tube, but not attached to it. and your fallopian tube has those finger-like projections on the end which waft the egg, which
the
we
wafting.
Always do, waft the egg into the tube, and then that egg travels down the tube all the
while
way.
While the sperm's travelling up the tube.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's met me. In the tube.
Yeah. And in an ideal, normal early pregnancy situation, yep. the sperm will meet the egg in the tube,
yep.
mm-hmm. fertilise the egg, and then that egg will start to develop into an early embryo.
Yeah. So it's dividing, it's dividing, it's dividing, it's dividing.
And it's travelling down to the uterus where your endometrium, the lining of your womb, is nice and thick and ready to receive the egg. Well,
it's
not
in
the
egg, secretory the stage. It's got all the secretions ready to be like, come on, with yeah. An embryo ready to kind of implant.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so that's happening. So implantation happens around about 7 to 10 days after fertilisation.
Okay.
So fertilisation happened the same day that you've...
That you have sex.
Sex.
Yeah, well within, it can.
It doesn't have to be that day. Okay. Sperm can hang around in your reproductive tract for a long time. Yeah. An egg dies off.
It hangs around for like 7 days.
It can hang up to that long, but the egg doesn't hang around. So if it doesn't get fertilised, it just kind of dies back. Yeah. So,
And then you have your period.
Yeah. Well, you don't have your period until 2 weeks.
Well, yeah.
But if there's an egg around, but yes, able to be fertilised and you have sex, then it could happen within that sort of 12, 24 hours of the egg being... Mm-hmm. Ready, available, an available egg.
And then the implantation window is around day 21 of your cycle.
Yeah.
So that's when it's travelled back, it's gotten divided, 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 divided. So you've ovulated day 14, it's travelled, divided, been fertilised, ready, and then implanted.
Yeah. And the implantation bit is key because that's when HCG, the hormone that is in your urine when you do a pregnancy test, starts to be produced. Mm-hmm. So we were talking a bit about the beginning, in the beginning about how people do pregnancy tests really early and you've got these really, really sensitive pregnancy tests. Yet. So once there is enough HCG in your urine to have a positive pregnancy test, you'll be able to see on the pregnancy test. But that can be as early as like a week before your missed period in some situations. So it can be even earlier that you find out you're pregnant, even before you've missed your period, which is good and bad.
So is that, you know, when you see online and people have like done a pregnancy test and they've shown it and like, I think it's clear or blue, but the digital ones that say like 3 weeks.
Yes.
That's like... You've actually not missed your period
yet. Not yet.
Okay.
Yeah, so
okay.
4 weeks would be around the missed period point.
The numbers confuse me.
But yeah, and that is what's happening basically
and
at that
there's
point.
Quite a lot of people posting that they've gotten darker and darker and darker.
Yeah.
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 So that's kind of
Have you seen that? So it's like...
Yeah, and it's like a gradient.
Yeah, like because you've got various different pregnancy tests. Some will have the digital like smiley face or sad face or pregnant, not pregnant, but the... Not older ones, but the more basic ones are like two lines, one for negative, two for positive. Sometimes they're in a plus, but sometimes they're next to each other. Mm-hmm. And then
like
some
COVID
people will.
Test, wasn't
yeah.
Like I was going to say when your COVID test got darker as well.
Yeah, yeah, basically. But some people will do a test like every day to see that that line's getting darker to reassure them that that
it's
HCG is getting stronger.
Yeah. Okay.
Which, yeah, can help some people. Mm-hmm. You don't have to do that at all.
Yeah.
No.
You specifically don't.
Thank you.
You do not have to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think, though, then it makes it very difficult if somebody's got a positive pregnancy test and they've just missed their period or they're just before their period because we can't do anything and we also can't see anything as gynecologists at that point. So... Yes, you're pregnant, but if you have some bleeding or if you have some pain, then it's really difficult for us to be able to kind of work out what's going on because we don't expect and can't see anything on an ultrasound scan. Mm-hmm. And we can't stop you from bleeding if you started bleeding and it was an early miscarriage. Yeah. So I find that really like a really difficult situation because I feel like people come to hospital for help.
Yeah.
And it's genuinely like, okay, so you've not missed your period yet and you're bleeding, but you do have a positive pregnancy test. You definitely have a positive pregnancy test, but we genuinely can't do anything.
Yeah.
And we talk about scanning from kind of 6 weeks pregnant if we're thinking of early pregnancy so that we can see something. But it is a difficult
really
time.
And it's the terminology used to describe that as a biochemical pregnancy. So... You'd explain that, you know, you've had an egg and a sperm that have met, but they've not quite got to the implantation. So you've had a positive test, but it's not got to the point where you've missed your period or, you know, you might have missed it by a few days. It was a few days late.
They speak about very sciencey, but it is some, like,
it's
you,
lost.
It's
well, exactly. Yeah. And that's why we've changed how we talk about that. You know, it doesn't matter at what stage your pregnancy stopped growing. It's still a miscarriage. And you can still be as you know, it can affect you in the same way as if it was at 12 weeks, you know.
It's definitely still a loss, but I think it's very difficult when people feel like they haven't got closure because we've not offered them a scan.
Yeah.
And having that long discussion about scans not showing anything. So at that point, if you were 4 weeks pregnant, you had a positive pregnancy test and no bleeding and everything was fine, we still wouldn't see anything.
Okay.
Yeah. So on a scan, you would expect to see kind of a thickened endometrium, so a thickened lining of your womb because it's not shed, but you wouldn't expect to see a pregnancy, a baby.
Yeah, you're not scanning and seeing all that.
And if you weren't pregnant at that point, the scan would look the same.
Yeah.
So you'd still just have a thickened lining of your womb. Yeah. And yeah, it is. It's a really, really tricky bit because you're in limbo. You've had a positive test. If you want to be pregnant, then you know you really want that
attached
to carry
to
on.
That, yeah.
You're bleeding, but there's no medical investigation that can actually help you or give you more information or change anything at that point, as Nick was saying. So it's really tough.
But in that case, you've had a positive pregnancy test. You've not missed your period yet, but you're having pain or bleeding, still go to see someone?
So if you're having pain, then I would go and see somebody. Yeah. If you've not started your period and you start bleeding, I think if you are kind of not happy, but you understand the situation and you understand that we can't do anything about it in like a rescuing situation, then what would happen is you could see an early pregnancy unit and they would book you in for a 6-week scan.
Okay.
But if you have a pregnancy test and then a couple of days later it goes negative, which can happen when it's very, very early bleeding, then a scan wouldn't change anything.
Yeah.
It doesn't take away that you've had a miscarriage. And if you would like to seek counselling or speak to someone about it, then of course people are happy to see you. But we wouldn't be booking you in for scans because it's not going to help the situation.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, there are some people that actually might prefer to not go to hospital at that point.
Yeah.
So if you're just in that situation that Nick's described where your period was not due yet, you had a positive test, but then your period came and then you've got a negative test, if you don't want to go to hospital, you don't have to.
Yeah. Okay.
You can stay at home. You don't have to seek any medical attention.
Yeah.
But if you want to, if there's something that you would be... that would be beneficial for you, then you can. It's just that there would be no need to do a scan at that point because there'd be nothing to see. Yeah.
Okay.
So is that 0 to 4?
Yes.
That is 0 to 4. Okay. Yes.
What about after that? What about 4 to 8?
She's moving in
forward. You're doing blocks of
10. 10%.
I like it. So this time there is a lot of change in this. Mm-hmm. So from kind of 5-6 weeks pregnant, we can start to see something on scan. And we start to see something on a transvaginal scan first. Mm-hmm.
So is that the inside the vagina? Have a look around.
I like the way like you're doing Harry Potter spells.
With the magic wand.
Yeah. So we have done a shout out for this before, but a transvaginal scan is not harmful to a pregnancy. And it is just the easiest way of us being close to a very, very tiny thing inside you. That when you're looking through your tummy and you've got to go through all the layers that potentially are there on your tummy, and we're looking at something that's deep, deep down in your pelvis, it's really difficult to see on a transabdominal scan, so a scan through your tummy. And I think people, if you've not been pregnant before and you've not had a transvaginal scan, are very wary of these. Mm-hmm. But I can 100% tell you that they are not harmful to any pregnancy, and it just means that we can actually tell you a bit better what's going on. Transabdominal scans work fine when you've got a really full bladder, so we're using the bladder as a window because obviously see through with the water, we can have a little window, but you need to be further on in your pregnancy.
Yeah, okay. It's just too small at the sort of 4, 5, 6, 7.
What kind of size are we talking?
Millimeters.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
like
okay,
millimeters.
So we sort of every pregnancy is slightly different, but generally they follow the same kind of growth in the uterus around weeks 4. You might see a teeny tiny sac.
Yeah.
Weeks 4 to 5 would be the start of the developing gestation sac that you might be able to see on ultrasound. So sometimes you'll scan. If anyone's seen an ultrasound scan, it tends to be quite grey and grainy.
Yeah.
But if there's fluid, it tends to be black.
Okay.
So the first thing you see is a very tiny black dot, which could be the start of an early pregnancy growing. Mm. You can also get random little cysts that can look like pregnancy sacs. So you might hear someone say, oh, I'm not sure if that's a pregnancy sac or a pseudo sac, which is like a false sac.
Yeah.
But that is the first thing you could possibly see at a very early scan.
But
and when you measure that,
it's
millimetres, yeah. And that will go on to become the like entire amniotic sac with a baby and a placenta in it.
Okay.
So we're talking teeny, teeny tiny,
tiny gestational sac is the first thing that you would expect to see. And then if you scanned a little bit further on, then you see a yolk sac. Now, a yolk sac looks like a hula hoop?
Yeah, just a little circle, a little ring, really. Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Do you see anything inside the ring or just a little ring?
No, just a little ring. So that ring feeds the developing baby.
Ah. Okay.
So it's a yolk sac.
It's an important hula hoop.
Oh, yeah. It's very important hula hoop. And I suppose it works if it's feeding the baby to be a hula hoop.
Yeah, I like
although
that.
It doesn't work with the healthy diet that we were discussing before.
No, it's not really a rainbow diet.
It's all a bit balanced.
So you'll have a gestational sac, which will be black and just a circle. And then inside that, your hula hoop, your yolk sac.
And when would you expect to see a heartbeat?
That's a bit later, so it can be as early as 5 weeks, but for most people, we'd say this is why we recommend scanning around 6 weeks onwards, because that's usually when you should see a visible heartbeat.
Okay.
So it's kind of roughly like, you know, gestation sac you would see first, and then yolk sac, but then around 6 weeks, we'd expect to see a heartbeat. And that heartbeat is on the embryo, which is developing, like it sort of starts to develop on the side of the yolk sac, hula hoop, so it becomes like a signet ring, you know, like with a little...
A charm?
Yeah, like a little thing on the end.
So that's the baby.
That's the developing baby.
The little diamond on the ring.
Yeah.
And then you would start to see a little flickering of cardiac activity around 6 weeks.
Wow. When you're scanning at first, it's kind of like, you're like, can you see that moving? Is that moving?
Is it my eyes?
It's so small.
Because
it's
so tiny. Really over-focused. And you're not looking at like a heart that's like pumping.
Yeah,
you're looking at something flickering on a screen. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very abstract at first.
Yeah.
And I've had a lot of people where you've scanned before and I'm like, look, and you can see that it's beating. And they're like,
nah.
And I'm like, no, you need to be convinced because I'm convinced you need to be convinced. Let's all look at this closely. Yeah. It's definitely beating.
Is there like a cut-off point of where it gets to, right, okay, we're at, say, 8 weeks and we can't see the flickering?
Yeah, and we've got a whole episode on miscarriage and we go into it in that episode. So if you wanted to listen to that in a bit more detail, definitely listen to that episode. But yeah, you're right. So we... You know, when we're scanning, we have sort of cut-off values to be able to diagnose miscarriage. So if you're looking at the gestation sac, if it's more than 25 millimetres diameter, it should have what we call the fetal pole, developing baby in it. So if it doesn't have one and it's 25 millimetres or more, then you can say that that's a miscarriage, not growing. And then once there is a little fetal pole or a little baby, if that is more than 7 millimetres, then it should have a heartbeat.
Okay.
That's active. So if it's more than 7 millimetres and there is no heartbeat, then you know that it's not growing, and unfortunately that's a miscarriage as well. But
that's
being said,
sometimes
there is...
people have to have scans, a couple of scans, because it might be that you fall into like a grey area where the sac is 20 millimetres but there's nothing inside it, and we all sit there and know that nothing is probably going to develop, but it's always a probably until you've done that second scan.
What did you say? Some pole?
Fetal pole.
What does that look like?
So that's just the little developing baby.
That's the diamond.
Right,
the diamond.
So I'm imagining like a pole. Like a little
line. Sort of start like a little line, and then as it gets bigger, it... We'll go into what it changes in appearance. But yeah, as it gets bigger, it looks more like a baby. Okay. But at the beginning, it's just like a little dot, a little line, and then it grows into a different shape.
But by the time you get to 8 weeks, you'll be able to see something that resembles a baby.
Yeah.
Oh, but do they resemble like, you know, eggs?
Little aliens.
They are like that,
yeah.
Because
they
tend to have quite big heads and then little bodies at the beginning.
And then
the little
arms
legs.
And legs.
Yeah. So that's kind of what's going on inside your uterus, but you've also got all of the hormones that are pumping around and changing. So the big one is progesterone.
Mm-hmm.
So progesterone's dominant in the second part of your cycle. So when you've ovulated, it keeps the lining of the womb nice and thick, ready for an egg to be received. And then if you are pregnant, it continues to be really high. And so progesterone is that hormone that makes you feel pretty rubbish at the second part of your cycle, makes you bloated. Some people get constipated, can make you spotty, can give you sore boobs. So that continues.
All the fun stuff.
All the way through. So a lot of those like early pregnancy feelings are actually due to progesterone levels being really, really high.
When does like morning sickness start? Which part of this?
So that's because of the HCG hormone. Okay. So as the HCG levels begin to rise, usually around, well, once the placenta starts to form, which is around the kind of like 6 week mark, it tends to have a big growth spurt and then it continues to grow. The HCG is what makes you feel sick.
Mm-hmm.
So some people, everyone's different. Some people notice it the day of their missed period. Other people, it might be as that level gets higher for them.
Yeah.
So they might start to feel sick around six, 7, 8 weeks.
I just realised as well, I said morning sickness, but am I right in thinking it's not just the
morning? Yeah, it's sickness. It can be any time of day. It can be all day. It could be nighttime. It's not always in the morning.
And sometimes it's not like sickness as in you're going to be sick. It's just like a feeling.
Just that like, ugh.
Yeah. Or like, you know, when you're hungover and you're like, do I eat?
No, I know that.
Or should I be sick? Or where am I in the middle of this? And you're like, if I eat through it, then I might feel better. Like if I just eat carbs and carbs and carbs, then I might feel better compared to if I just eat nothing. And I think that you're just bordering that.
It is like a hangover feeling, isn't it? And like, you know, like if you are hungover and you're sick, in that like 10 minutes before you're sick, you feel pretty rubbish. But then once you've been sick, you feel all right.
Yeah.
Well, with pregnancy sickness, it's sort of like that 10-minute window, but for like the whole day.
Yeah.
So you never get relief.
Without the fun of having a bottle of wine.
Yeah,
exactly. And you've got the like real tiredness that you get with a hangover as well, because you just, your body is doing so much work.
Building
and
a baby.
Building a baby. You've got these huge levels of hormones that also make you feel a bit fatigued and tired. So you just feel exhausted, bloated, constipated, sore boobs, tired, moody.
Really selling it well.
Can't wait to be an early pregnancy.
Yeah, it's awful.
So by this point, you've felt rubbish, you've missed a period, maybe two, you probably know that you're pregnant.
Yeah. Mm.
You've done a test. What do you then do? Like, who do you phone? Like, medical-wise. Like, tell whoever you want to tell, but like...
Yeah.
How do you...
So you book the pregnancy. Different hospitals will be different. It always used to be that you needed to see a GP. A GP would book the pregnancy. It doesn't happen anymore. So, for example, if you wanted to book at your local hospital, you go on their website and it will be like, book your antenatal care. And so you can do it through, like, the website is most of what happens now.
I know, because it would feel real. You're like, do I call 999? I'm pregnant!
I bet that has happened a few times.
Oh, yeah.
111, I'm pregnant.
Yeah. They're like, and congratulations. Right.
It's a medical emergency. I mean, I suppose so.
What do you count as an emergency? But I think it's that, I do get what you're saying, because you're pregnant and you're like, so the test says I'm pregnant. Mm-hmm. You don't work in a hospital, so you've not got your friend to scan you, or you've not had a problem, so you've not like scanned, like you've not had any scans. And you're like, I'm pregnant, but am I?
Does someone need to verify this?
Literally.
That would be me. I'd be sat there like, how do I prove this?
Yeah.
I guess that's why a lot of people end up doing lots and lots of tests. Yeah. Like, am I still taking pictures?
Yeah.
Also, you know, those horrible symptoms I was describing, not everyone feels that bad. So you might be lucky and not actually have any symptoms and then be like, are you sure I'm pregnant? Because I don't feel any different.
You feel quite well.
It is a funny kind of weird area where, like, you haven't got this kind of like, you're definitely pregnant because you've not had a scan that's shown you the pregnancy.
It's not like a diagnosis.
You don't have a bump yet. You can't like visibly tell that you're pregnant. Yeah, it's a strange time.
And I guess doing it for the first time, like having your first child, must be a bit mental. You're just like, how do I do this?
Well, especially a lot of people wouldn't have told anyone. So they're walking around and they're like, I'm pregnant. Do you think
it's like a little secret?
Anyone can tell? Anyone? Do I look different? Do I feel different? I think it is. Although you might have had, within that 4 to 8 weeks time, you might have had a scan, because if you have had pain and or bleeding, then you should seek medical attention because early pregnancy is fraught with all of the things. So you can have an ectopic pregnancy, which is a pregnancy outside of the womb, so a pregnancy that's in the wrong place, not an ongoing pregnancy. This will not be a live baby at the end of this. Or you may unfortunately have a miscarriage. So between the 4 to 8 weeks is like a massive step. When we see a heartbeat on a scan, the chances of miscarriage goes down rapidly. So that first few weeks when we don't know what's going on, no one's seen a scan, is the time where things could go wrong, but also a lot of times we can't see things on a scan. So I think it's just
it's quite common to end up needing an early scan. So for two reasons. One, there are some symptoms that are normal in early pregnancy but could also mean miscarriage or ectopic pregnancy.
Okay.
So we didn't mention that in early pregnancy it is normal to have some discomfort and some pain, and you can have some cramping feelings.
Yeah, definitely.
You can have some quite sharp pain. And if you have any pain that you're concerned about, you should always go to your local gyne unit and have an early pregnancy unit and have a scan to check. So you might have had a scan. Also, bleeding can be normal in early pregnancy. So some people get a little bit of light bleeding when the embryo is implanting or when the placenta is forming, or just because all of the hormones and the blood supply are increased, and that can mean that you've got lots of little friable vessels that can just bleed.
Yeah.
So you can have bleeding, and if you do, like Nick said, you should go and get it checked out. So you may have already had a scan, but also because lots of people get private scans in early pregnancy now.
Yeah.
Because they're so much cheaper and accessible than they used to be. And it's fun, isn't it? You know, you're pregnant, you want to go and see your pregnancy. Yeah. So lots of people have private scans in early pregnancy too.
I feel it sounds like quite an anxiety-inducing time.
Yeah.
So I would get why people would pay to go and get an extra scan.
Yeah, definitely. It does happen quite a lot, really.
It's like real in your head.
Yeah. Like, it's what pregnant people do. They go and get scans, so you might as well do it too.
Yeah.
And also, like, all you've had is the pregnancy test. Like, there is.
You're like, can I see it again? Yeah. I can't believe it.
Yeah, definitely.
I feel like it's one of the, it takes time, doesn't it, to realise what's going on.
Definitely.
And then, like, other things that are happening during that 4 to 8 week period are that the embryo is growing, isn't it? It's like going through massive growth. So we mentioned it gets to this around 6 weeks, you can see a fetal pole with a heartbeat. It then goes on to develop. So its head gets bigger. It has a little kind of like tadpole-like body to start with. And then limb buds will appear. So it'll have little
limb buds,
yeah.
Like little buds ready for arms to come out of.
Arms and legs to come out of, yeah. And major organs will start to form as well.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's really, really key to be on folic acid around this time, because that's when the back starts to close, so the neural tube that becomes your spinal cord starts to close, and so if you are on folic acid, then you're less likely to have any neural tube defects.
To try and avoid spina bifida.
Spina bifida.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Okay, and then should we go for the next 4 weeks?
Okay. Yeah.
8 to 12, if I can still count.
So it's a big change then. It's no longer an embryo.
It looks like a baby, basically, on a scan.
Okay. Yeah. Are we past alien stage as well?
We're past that, yeah.
Like, genuinely, because...
I feel they might still be alien.
Yeah.
But you can see, if you scan at this stage, a lot of times you can scan on the tummy now, as long as you've got a full bladder, and you can see a baby kind of moving, so you can see arms and legs, and you can see it, like, what looks like hopping, you know, like,
around. Would you be able to feel, like, kicking at this point? No.
Okay. Still
so it is... really abstract. They, on a screen, you can see that this baby is going cray cray, and you're like, this they're telling me is inside me, and I can see the transducer is on me, so I'm pretty sure it is inside me. Why on earth can I not feel it?
It's like crazy. Yeah,
but you can't. Like,
I feel like I can feel my digestion inside me.
Yeah, and when people say they can't feel the baby, it's probably digestion.
It's about eating for two.
Yes, which you shouldn't do.
But it's it's not an embryo anymore. It's now called a fetus, which is a big thing.
Change our words.
It's kind of got all of it. It grows a lot in this time. It's still millimetres to start with, but then it becomes centimetres in these 4 weeks. But that's
like
because...
It is rapid growth.
Yeah. And at the end of 8 weeks, it actually does have all of its organs formed. They're then, you know, it's like a fully formed miniature tiny person. But then it will go on to grow a hell of a lot during the rest of the pregnancy. So it then becomes a fetus rather than an embryo.
Do all the organs develop at the same time, or is there like some that come before?
No, there's an order. So like it's like a bit...
I will make you go through the whole.
But you know, like, in a way of like, oh, like everybody knows when they come in.
Everybody's
and what
got
steps
their job, yeah.
And things can go wrong at each step. So when, like, I don't know, someone's got a heart condition because their hearts, the vessels that are coming from it are the wrong way around, or something like that. You could pick out like what will happen at what stage, or your womb is two tubes and then it joins in the middle. So if it doesn't join in the middle, then it will be two tubes instead of one whole womb. So like each bit is under like different mechanisms for it to kind of all do the correct things at the correct time.
Yeah, it is actually incredible. Like, yeah. What goes on in those first 8 weeks is
lots
just
of little minions moving around
and
doing all the different stuff.
And it's no wonder you feel exhausted when you think about it, because your body is putting
all the energy supply into that happening.
And if you think going from 16 millimetres to 6 centimetres in those 4 weeks.
That's
it's a lot, isn't it?
Yeah. It's a lot of growth.
I think
you can't do that math.
It's a lot. My hair doesn't even grow that quick.
Damn it. But your hair's so long.
No, it is a lot to grow. And then at this kind of stage as well, you can think about whether you would like screening. So as part of the NHS, you can have screening tests for things like Down syndrome and other chromosomal issues. Mm-hmm. There are tests that are available on the NHS, and there are tests that are available privately as well. And this screening test is done as part of your dating scan. Mm-hmm. So you come for your dating scan, everybody's like, your 12-week scan. Mm. But actually, it doesn't need to be done at 12 weeks. Okay. It's done within a period of a few weeks.
Okay. Mm.
So the baby has got to actually just be a certain length to be able to do the tests, if you want the screening test done.
How do they do that?
The screening test.
Like looking at them?
Or? Yeah, so it's got a couple of elements. So the screening test looks at the thickness at the back of the baby's neck, so your nuchal translucency, and it looks at a blood test from you as well.
That was a big word.
Mm-hmm. From you.
So at this point, when your baby is a certain size, you can have your screening test, and that will be part of your 12-week, in inverted commas, dating scan, because you don't need to have that dating scan at 12 weeks specifically. It can be between 9 and 13 plus 6, and that's because the baby needs to be a certain length, okay. Basically.
Plus six days.
Yeah.
Nine to
everything,
however many weeks.
Everything, yeah, nine, everything
13
is,
weeks. But plus 13 weeks plus 6 days.
Yeah,
is
everything is like, it's got, when you're pregnant, it's to the day. So yeah. They're plus, yeah. So
that's
when you're
crazy,
term, you're like 40
day.
Plus 4.
Plus
like,
6 is random.
So because there's 7 days in a week, it's just like, 13 and 1 is 13 weeks and 1 day, 13 and 6, 13 weeks and 6 days, but then it'd be 14 weeks. And then
okay,
be
so
like,
it's not random.
But I know what you mean. It's like, we don't talk in these weeks and days normally, so it is kind of strange in a pregnancy.
Yeah, but in pregnancy, they always do that. So as part of your screening, as part of your dating scan, they would tell you how pregnant you are because they measure the baby. Mm. And no matter whether you've had an IVF pregnancy, so you know exactly the day they got pregnant, or whatever date you've been worked out with your last period, that's what, when they tell you your due date is at that scan, is what your due date
okay.
is.
Yeah, that's like the most accurate dating for your pregnancy, because it's the size of the baby, and then it predicts when your due date would be. So that, that like, the fact that we dated you from your last period before that is nowhere near as accurate as the size of the baby that's in your uterus.
Got it.
Yeah.
So they do that as part of the scan, and then they, I think people are like, sometimes can you tell what sex the baby is? But no, it's very
too
very
soon.
Small at that point. But you can, you would be offered a screening test. Mm-hmm. So at that time, you can have a screening test that combines the nuchal translucency, which is the thickness of the back of the neck, and a blood test that the mum would have, and it takes lots of different things into account. And from that, it gives you a risk, and a risk of your baby having like a Down syndrome.
So it'd be like. Like 1 in 5,000 risk, or it might be higher than that. And depending on what the risk is, you might then. So that's a screening test.
Yes, screening.
If you were high risk,
not,
so they're not, it's not a diagnosis.
It's got this.
No. Okay. And it doesn't pick up all of them at all. So I think it's 85% accurate for Down syndrome, and it's less accurate for other conditions.
Yeah.
So it's a screening test.
Yeah. So if you were high risk within that screening test result, you could then choose, if you wanted to go on and have a diagnostic test to
find out
if that condition is there or isn't there.
How do they do that?
Different ways depending on how many weeks pregnant you are, but it's more invasive. So in one way is when you're a bit more pregnant, so around 14, 15 weeks, you can have a needle that goes into, it goes into the pregnancy, and it takes a little sample of baby's DNA, so you can take it from the placenta, which comes with its own risk. There's a little risk of miscarriage, and it might not be for everyone, so that you'd have a discussion if you wanted to have that test, or if you didn't, and the kind of repercussions.
It depends where you risk, like what is my level of risk might be very different to Lorna's level of risk, so you need to think yourself about you and your partners and how things would change in the pregnancy if you knew or didn't know that your baby had for example chromosomal abnormality. So a CVS, a chorionic villus sampling, is one that you do a bit earlier, so that's the sampling of the placenta, and then you can have an amniocentesis, a sample of the water around the baby, which is a little bit further on. You need to be a little bit more pregnant for that to happen.
The amniotic fluid?
And that is, they are not screening, they are diagnostic. So they will
tell
you specifically.
Yes or no.
Can they be wrong?
No, they're like diagnostic.
Okay.
They can have no reads, like you've not got enough material to make a read. But they're not wrong.
Okay, got it.
There is another test that you can have as well, which I feel like we should probably touch on because it's very much out there on kind of social media.
Okay.
Is called cell-free fetal DNA. So that's whereby it's non-invasive, mm-hmm. but it's a screening test, but it's a lot more diagnostic than what the NHS offers with that back of the neck yeah. and the blood mm-hmm. test. So this is a blood test that the mum has.
Okay.
Because the baby sheds DNA into the mum's bloodstream.
Okay.
So the blood test has a look at the DNA in the mum's bloodstream and takes into account that you should have the normal number of chromosomes.
Okay.
So is there still a normal number of chromosomes looking at all of them that they've okay. found?
Yeah.
So if they found like an extra chromosome 21, then that's coming from the baby and not from you.
Okay.
So
yeah, so you can pay privately to have yeah. that test okay. if you want to. So I think a lot of people do that.
No,
but it's not. It's not currently. There are some situations where you might get yeah. it on the NHS. Mm. We've really gone down a rabbit hole here, but for most people, it's not available on the okay. NHS. And if you want it, you can pay for it, and it's usually a few hundred pounds. But you don't need to do that if you wanted to just have the routine antenatal yeah. screening.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's not a necessity. It's mm. a choice.
I always think as well that when celebrities are very. Various people find out what the sex of the baby is and they're like 13, 14 weeks pregnant, then often they've had cell-free fetal DNA because that would be able to sex your baby.
Yeah. Oh,
because if they find a Y chromosome in your blood,
yeah,
then the baby's a boy.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
So you can find out even earlier.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, very early. Yeah.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So they do it actually on the NHS to look for whether you've got rhesus, if you're rhesus negative or
yeah.
not. So
we'll go into that.
Lorna's like, oh, yeah. Yeah.
So they do use a test in the NHS for if you are rhesus negative.
So okay. your blood type.
If your blood group was, say, O negative.
Okay.
Then if your baby has a blood group that's positive.
Oh, those two don't go together.
They don't. So you okay. would need to have anti-D to make sure. In that pregnancy wouldn't be affected, but yeah. your next pregnancy could be affected with
basically
rhesus.
It's like
if you've built up antibodies
because you're in that pregnancy you've got your baby is positive and mm-hmm. you are negative okay. for an antigen which is like a protein right
yeah
rhesus protein so in that pregnancy at some point you'll exchange a little bit of that protein yeah. with the baby and then your body recognizes that as a foreign body
yeah.
and produces antibodies to fight it
mm-hmm.
So this baby's all right.
Totally fine.
But if okay. you get pregnant again, then your body will be like, and that baby's rhesus positive.
Okay.
Your immune system will be like, oh, that foreign thing
that's
is back.
I need to get rid
Let's
of that
attack
again.
It. And then that baby okay. can become very unwell and become very anemic.
Okay.
So you take this anti-D injection in the first pregnancy to prevent that whole response
And every
happening.
Pregnancy after, if you have yeah. a miss, like if the
if you've got a mismatch rhesus
negative
status.
Baby's positive.
Yeah.
And just remind me how they figure out what so I would potentially know my blood type
yes
how do we know what
they can do
blood
it a self reveal
okay you? Okay got you I was just like I've lost type. This line
oh,
me neither I've never
have
had
you ever
to.
Donated blood
no
oh well you should number well, one
yeah,
yeah.
you find out then
yeah
when you give blood
that's
they tell you what your blood is
yeah
sorted
but yeah that's like one criteria yeah. where you would get offered the cell-free fetal DNA test on the NHS
just for that kind of screening
and I don't think they tell you any other information either
no they don't
tell you the
same. Like, well, they do it early on as well. So yeah. they do it when potentially they're not going to have enough shedded DNA to be able to tell you about everything else.
Okay.
So that is one of the ways that the NHS actually does use that. And it means that they have to give out less anti-D because they only give it in the specific situations that is needed. Because before they would give it to anybody who had a negative blood group, regardless of what the baby was, because we wouldn't know what the baby was until the baby was born and the blood group had been tested, etc.
Okay.
So to stop all that from happening.
Cost saving.
Without going into blood groups too much.
Yeah.
If you're positive.
Yeah. Mm.
Don't need to worry.
Okay, great. Yeah. That was the question. Yeah, yeah. Great, okay.
Fine. They do it, I'll just quickly, I'm sorry, I know we've gone down a complete rabbit hole.
We're really far down a rabbit hole.
Yeah,
I can't even see the day.
Like, where are we?
We'll
I feel like we quickly have to touch on that if you have a miscarriage and need surgery for the miscarriage, or if you have an ectopic pregnancy, or if you have a termination and need mm-hmm. surgery for the termination, then you would need anti-D in these cases as well.
Okay. If you are
rhesus negative,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
just Because I think some people are like, oh, well, I've had that, but when did I have it? And it might have been following one of these situations.
Okay.
So it's not just in pregnancy.
Shall we climb back to the daylight?
Right, let's
we
need to get a ladder.
So
we did a bit about screening.
Yeah.
Which isn't for everybody. And
that what we should say as well is that that happens, like that blood test that you have as part of your routine screening, that happens at your booking appointment, which is the first appointment that you see for the pregnancy. So it's actually like, it's usually around 8 weeks, but it can be a little bit later. It's the appointment that you see a midwife and you go through your whole medical history, if you have any, a bit about your family history, a bit about the pregnancy. And that's like the first appointment in your pregnancy, which is really nice because then, you know, it feels a bit more real.
Yeah.
You've now got notes about your pregnancy.
Like someone's written it down.
Yeah. And in that appointment, that's when... like
you don't get a scan though, which I think is still like...
You don't get a scan until later.
You can have like quite a long appointment with the midwife that you discuss all your medical history and stuff. You might have booking bloods, which look for infections that you might have had and various different things. And they give you information about screening, but then you come back for your screening / dating scan. And you can decide on the day whether you would like to have... Well, you can't decide on the day actually because you need a longer appointment if you haven't screening, but they must ask you at some point about that. But yeah, you still don't have any kind of scan, which it's that like it's just a black hole of a lot of weeks.
And that is why a lot of people end up having a private scan if they don't need one on the NHS. So what else?
So that's all happening with baby. How is mum feeling at this point in pregnancy? Are we still feeling
pretty
rough?
Rubbish.
Okay.
Yeah, I think a lot of the symptoms are still there in weeks 8 to 12 for the mum, because basically the mum is producing all the hormones to support the pregnancy until the placenta's developed enough to take over.
Yeah.
So you're pumping out loads of progesterone, loads
you're working
of estrogen,
like extra hard.
And those hormones are making you feel pretty rubbish.
Okay.
And the HCG
tired?
In there as well. Still tired. You can still feel bloated, constipated, sore boobs.
All
of the above.
Things.
All of the things.
Yeah. So that's still going on, and people tend to, and if you are still if you're having pregnancy sickness, you will still be feeling it at that time. You might start to feel a little bit better after 12 weeks, but in some people it does continue on a little bit longer into the second trimester, and in a small number of people it can continue all the way through the pregnancy, which is pretty rubbish.
Yeah. Okay. And if you, for example, because we've said it's HCG related, if you were to have a twin pregnancy, you've got all of
double.
The HCG, as in loads more HCG.
So you're more likely to feel sick.
Would you know that it's a twin pregnancy before you have a scan, or would that be you found out?
No, you would only know at your scan, unless you're someone that has twins in your family and you know there's a chance that it might be twins and you feel very, very sick. You might be more suspicious that it's twins. Or if you've had fertility treatment and you went to a different country and they put two embryos in, you might be more likely, like, okay, maybe both have taken.
Yeah.
But the scan would be when you know for sure.
Okay.
And with the feeling sick, just like eat little and often, have a bottle of water like everybody else does these days, because everyone likes to be super hydrated.
Nick loves the emotional support water bottles.
And but just have like little and often.
And
like,
listen to our episode.
I think, people get really worried about not being able to sit down and eat a full meal. Mm. That's fine. Your baby is actually like a parasite and will take everything it needs from you. So you may feel absolutely terrible, but your baby is living its best life.
They're thriving.
And so definitely just little and often. If you fancy a biscuit, have a little biscuit.
Yeah.
If you fancy some, you know, just little and often.
Just
little
be kind to yourself
body,
at that point, definitely.
Definitely.
The one thing we haven't touched on that I've thought is very interesting is you actually, well, some people go and find that they wee a lot in the first trimester.
Oh.
So you're probably all aware of like, women who are heavily pregnant often finding that the baby's pressing on their bladder and they need a wee more often. But it actually happens a lot earlier than you expect. So even just like the uterus being a bit bigger and a very small embryo in there means that there is more pressure on your bladder. So you'll feel the need to go more often.
Mm.
But also you get an increase in your blood circulation volume.
Ah.
And that can mean that you end up producing more wee as well. So even from the beginning of pregnancy, you might be waking up multiple times a night to go for a wee.
Do you mean more blood?
You have more blood.
More blood.
Your body produces more blood when you're pregnant, which is kind of in preparation for when you deliver the baby, because you're at risk of losing lots of blood. It's like a protective thing.
So it's slightly watered down in a sense.
Okay.
Yeah.
But
so a lot of people become anemic in pregnancy.
Your circulation, like massively, so about 10% by this week, you would have an increased blood volume. Wow. So you're carrying lots
and
of
is there
blood
any like physical things you can see that show that, like bins close to the surface or anything like that?
No, not because of the increased circulation, but you do, I mean, women do get a bit veinier when they're pregnant, but this tends to be later on, so okay. Not in the first trimester usually.
Not sure.
Yeah. But yeah, I thought, I mean, that was a surprise when I was pregnant. I was like, oh my God, I'm going for a wee like 3 or 4 times a night and I'm only 8 weeks. Is this going to last all the way through? And
No,
it got better in the second trimester and then bad again in the third.
Most of it does get better in the second trimester. You feel a lot better at that point. Yeah. So.
I've heard people call the first trimester like the trenches of the pregnancy.
Yeah, the trenches, I like it.
Yeah, definitely. It's
the
a horrible
trenches.
Bit.
Yeah. The first trenches.
Okay, so is that everything we were hoping to cover?
No, I don't think so.
Should we question some myths?
Yeah, we should. So, a questions. What food should I avoid during early pregnancy, if there is one?
Well, it's kind of foods that you should avoid throughout the whole pregnancy rather than just early. The NHS website has got really good information about this, so we will put a link at the bottom. Yep. Generally, to keep it nice and easy, you want to avoid raw meat because of a risk of infection.
That's fair.
Yeah. So for those people who really like raw steaks,
rare.
Which are basically raw, let's be honest. You're going to want to cook your meat properly. Yeah. Have well-done food.
Thoroughly cooked.
Yeah.
I won't be having steak then in pregnancy.
And then there is certain...
mine medium rare.
Yeah, definitely. There are certain cheeses that you want to avoid. So it's non-pasteurised milk or non-pasteurized cheeses, so you can check by reading the label on the cheese, but usually it's like soft cheeses are often like non-pasteurized like brie, but you can get some that are pasteurized. Marks and Spencer's do a pasteurized brie, so you can have that
they
one.
Do.
And yeah, other things,
M&S accommodating,
they're very very good. Yeah, and egg wise you're okay in the UK, because if you have, you know, those eggs have a little red line on them, a red line stamped egg.
Red line. I thought you said a red line.
Red line, sorry. Yeah. If it's a red line stamped egg, then it's generally safe for you to have slightly runny eggs with it, a slightly runny scrambled eggs. Otherwise, just do a hard-boiled or well-done scrambled egg, and then you know you're on the safe side. But we'll put a link to the NHS information about that.
Okay. Yeah. Gorge. The next question is, can I take over-the-counter medication while pregnant? And that might be fueled by Trump's claims about paracetamol.
So you can take paracetamol. Paracetamol is totally fine, and I've just got no clue at all where
his
claims
came
from.
Yeah. It's mad, isn't it? I looked at something into it, and it was essentially, there was a study that showed that women who had a fever in pregnancy had a higher association with the baby having autism, and women who had a fever took paracetamol. So it's like he's just completely misinterpreted this study and thought that now women who take paracetamol are more likely to have autism. But actually it's even worse, because if you take paracetamol, it brings your temperature down, so you're less likely to have a fever.
Yeah.
So if that is the link with autism, then you're less likely to have a child with autism. It's just
on the whole though.
Honestly.
On the whole though, you shouldn't take medications unless you've checked with somebody.
Yeah. But you
so
can check
yes,
that with the
there are medications that you can take. There are antihistamines you can take if you have hay fever. You should carry on your normal medication. So if you have asthma, you should carry on. No.
Well, you don't need him.
Yeah.
So stop him.
But you should be carry on your normal medication. So if you're epileptic, for example, you don't want to come off those, because having a fit would be more detrimental to being on the epileptic medications.
And same with antidepressants as well. If you're on an antidepressant and you get pregnant, a lot of women stop it thinking that they should, but actually it's most of them are safe in pregnancy, and you're better off staying on it for your mood than stopping it and then
just something
it.
They should run past with
just
see
GP about
it.
Definitely
should they ask about like certain vitamins and stuff as well, or is that usually safe, like over-the-counter vitamins?
Well, just take your like pre-pregnancy kind of vitamin. That's all you need to be taking. You don't need
acid.
Any more than that. Take
I would say if you're taking something random that you found on Instagram, and it, you know, just
to
be
get
cautious of what it is. Know what you're taking, and
read
when
the ingredients.
When your GP or your midwife asks asks you what you're taking, tell them the supplements as well as the prescribed medication, because there might be something in there that might interact or that isn't safe in pregnancy. So you don't want to take too much vitamin A in pregnancy. So Pregnacare and other like brands of pregnancy vitamins will have no vitamin A in. But if you're taking something else with high vitamin A, that's not recommended in pregnancy.
Mm-hmm. And there's obviously some painkillers that aren't recommended in pregnancy. Yeah. So you wouldn't want to take ibuprofen. And you wouldn't take codeine specifically unless you were on it for something else, because it can make you very constipated, make you sick, make you tired.
But then just to confuse things, if you have migraines and ibuprofen works for your migraines, you might be advised to continue.
So, it's pretty person specific is what we're hearing.
No, I think it's very person specific. Yeah. So there are medications that are safe, in inverted commas, while you're pregnant, because none of them have been tested in pregnancy.
Yeah.
Because that, like, you couldn't do a trial on, let's have a bunch of pregnant people and see what happens when they take this.
Yeah.
So that's just not going to happen. Mm-hmm. But we know, because we've got data from lots and lots and lots and lots of women, that these are safe in pregnancy. Yeah, yeah. Pharmacists will know this as well. So if you've got questions about that, then you can ask pharmacists. Okay. There's a lot of chat about aspirin, because a lot of people end up taking aspirin in pregnancy, and this is to try and prevent the risk of preeclampsia later in pregnancy. And there are people that take aspirin because of miscarriage as well. But then if you read the box on aspirin, it would be like, don't take while you're pregnant. So if someone has advised you in a medical capacity to take it, that's very different for you than just deciding just to take it yourself.
What if people are on, like, weight loss drugs like Ozempic?
Yeah, they definitely shouldn't take those in pregnancy. And you should be off them for a period of time before you get pregnant. So they're different depending on what medication you're on. So Ozempic and Mounjaro have got actually different time spans that you should be off them before you get before you try to conceive, because they're out of your system at different times. So I think one of them's 6 weeks, one of them's 8 weeks. So you should not be on those while you're pregnant. But also, all the information that's come out is that there haven't been detrimental to pregnancies.
Yeah, because there's been a bit of a baby boom with people on them, hasn't there?
Well, yeah, because if you've not had periods, you've got a BMI of 40, because you've not, you've got a BMI of 40, you're not having periods, or you're having quite irregular periods, you've taken weight loss injections.
Oh, so the periods are bad.
And then the periods come back and you get pregnant.
And then they're gone again.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, then they're gone again for 9 months specifically. So, yeah, definitely. Mm. But you shouldn't be on them while you're pregnant.
Yeah. Okay.
If you're someone that is on lots of different drugs and you're not sure what's safe or not, and you want to get pregnant, see your GP.
Oh my gosh, see somebody before.
See someone before. And if the GP doesn't know, they can refer you to an antenatal clinic.
Yeah, there's
and you
loads
can have preconception counselling.
There's loads of optimization that's done with regards to, for example, epilepsy medications, because some are safer than others. If you're on blood thinners, you need to kind of come off those and go on different blood thinners while you're pregnant. So if you have a medical condition that means you are on specific medications, then speak to somebody before you get pregnant, because actually you can be advised.
Perfect.
Is it me?
That was my rabbit hole question.
Three extra questions during that. Is moodiness or anxiety normal in early pregnancy?
Yes. 100%. Doesn't mean everyone will experience that, but I'd say moodiness, as we mentioned, progesterone can have that kind of effect on you.
I feel like it's normal on your period.
Yeah,
if you feel rough, if you're moody, that's fair.
Yeah, and I'd say anxiety. Pregnancies can be very anxiety inducing because you don't know. I mean, you've got something growing inside your body, which is totally different.
You may have never done that before. You can't feel it moving. Yeah. You can't see it.
You're like
you
trying to feel it.
Yeah,
it's you're going through all these body changes that they can be anxiety inducing. You might have had a miscarriage before and you've been worried about that.
And I'm
so
sure your following page on TikTok or Instagram is telling you everything ever, making you stress more.
Definitely.
So another question, which is sort of similar to my last one. Is caffeine safe during early pregnancy?
So it's safe if you're having a coffee a day. If you're having 10 coffees a day, then there has been links to miscarriages. Limit your caffeine intake.
It's like 200 milligrams a day is the recommended upper limit, which I just think is really difficult because you don't know how many milligrams are in a coffee or whatever. But it sort of works out like one strong coffee a day, so it's not really that much. And also be mindful that caffeine isn't just in coffee and tea, it's in chocolate, it's in Monster and all these other crazy drinks. But limit it, but you don't have to not. You don't have to avoid it completely.
And just a final question, because obviously we're talking about early pregnancy. Up to what point, if you found out you're pregnant and actually this isn't the right time, you didn't want this, what's termination timescales like?
Okay, so termination timescales are different for different pregnancies and for different reasons. Mm-hmm. So I would say the earlier the better for a termination is the safest time to go for termination. So if you are pregnant and you really don't want to be pregnant, then seek help early. Yeah. Go and see someone, speak it through, and then make sure you've made the right decision for you. It is best if you can speak to people as well. Try not to keep it to yourself. It's something that, you know, you want support going through. Yeah. If you've got somebody that you can speak to, whether that's like your partner or a parent or a friend, you know, seek help with this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yeah, the earlier the better.
Okay.
Terminations can be done throughout pregnancy for different reasons, but the earlier the better if you have found yourself pregnant and it wasn't exactly your plan.
Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah, I think that's the best way to wrap that up, isn't it? And we are actually going to do a whole episode on terminations, which we'll go into that a little bit more detail. Yeah.
And then some myths.
Let's do it.
So we've already gone through this, that morning sickness doesn't always have to be in the morning.
No, it can be any time.
You can't exercise when pregnant.
No, untrue. Mm-hmm. And if you do already do some exercise and you feel like you can, you should carry on, because that will make you more likely to have a healthy pregnancy.
Yeah. Channel as Paula Radcliffe.
Although, I mean, I'm very impressed.
She could run through don't pregnancy. Don't turn into Paula Radcliffe as soon as you're pregnant.
Don't
if you're already...
I would say you continue your level of exercise that you had before pregnancy if you feel up to it. And you know, if you don't feel up to it, don't feel too bad.
Yeah. If you feel up to it, carry on. If you've not been doing any exercise, then you know, this is a good time to get yourself as kind of ready as you can be for a pregnancy and a child. So take up walking or think about, you know, like take up things gradually. Yeah, don't just like jump into marathon training.
Yeah.
But you can
become an Olympian gymnast.
Yeah. But you can like you can start kind of moving.
Yeah, just go for like 3 walks a week. Yeah, you know, something like that. Something like nice and manageable. Not doing. Just
I thought you were
going to
say 3 walks a day, and I was like,
3 walks a day.
Walking to the bathroom 3 times a night.
The next one I think is such a popular one. You can tell the baby's gender based on pregnancy symptoms.
There's so much stuff online, isn't it?
There's so many things.
I think it can be fun, but
also
they're not
you've
accurate.
Got a 50-50 chance. Guys, like the odds are really good that you're going to be able to guess because it's 50-50.
Yeah. True that.
So I think like all of these. I had someone actually quite recently say that they'd had an at-home blood test that told them what the baby was, and if it was wrong when the baby's born, and they get the money back or something, you have to send off and get the money back. And
so
I was
that's
like,
a 50-50.
So they're just getting 50% of the funds.
But also, like, how many people after they've had a baby
are remembering like, to get
where's
the money
that piece
back?
Of paper? Because I need to get the money back.
What a scam!
And it was like a finger prick. End of. I was just like, there was
no
nothing
chance.
That
no
could
chance.
Do
no
that
way.
For you.
No.
But
no.
I felt a bit bad telling her, but also I was just like, you have totally been scammed right now.
She needs to set a reminder to get her money back.
It reminded me of when you said something about being around a cat.
Yes, there was.
There's like actually a study.
Oh God, yeah. So this is a rabbit hole, but this came because my friend mentioned it because I have cats. So there was a study that showed cats often have an infection called toxoplasmosis.
Yes,
And it's like a parasite in their poo. And apparently, if you own cats, you've probably been exposed to it at some point, and you're probably immune to it. And there was a study that showed something to do with if you have cats, you're more likely to have a boy because you've been exposed to this toxoplasmosis and you're immune to it, and that means that you're more likely to have a boy. But then I was like, oh my God, this is so interesting. So I started reading into it loads. And there actually is evidence out there, but it's so conflicting. I know. It's so conflicting because then No, it didn't. But it was also something to do with like, if you, depending on when you've been exposed to the parasite, is when you would have immunity, and that will change either boy or girl. So I was like, this is just complete.
Slightly more on this rabbit hole. They do say that pregnant women shouldn't scoop like a cat's litter tray.
No, so that's because if you are pregnant and you get infection, if you're exposed to toxoplasmosis, then it can cause miscarriage and fetal abnormalities.
So still get out of scooping the litter
tray. So if you're pregnant, don't be doing the cat litter tray, basically. But apparently, if you're not pregnant, you've been exposed to it, you can develop an immunity to it.
Okay, good to know.
But the main thing is, if you're pregnant, don't be going near the cat poo.
Yeah.
And it does not mean you'll have a boy or a girl if you have a cat.
We can't tell the gender.
The jury's out on that one. Yeah.
And just a quick final one, you'll know right away that you're pregnant.
No, I think that you can, if you want to be pregnant, you can make any symptom feel like you're pregnant.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, if you want to be pregnant, you could convince yourself you're pregnant.
Yeah.
But I don't think you specifically know. I think it's more like you're trying to convince yourself.
That sperm and egg meeting.
No, not imagine. I think that's why it can be so, like, difficult, because those early pregnancy symptoms are the same as like premenstrual symptoms.
Yeah.
So you're like, if you want to be pregnant, you're like, oh, okay, I've got a cramp. Is that my period, or could that be implantation? Yeah. And there's just no way.
Really, yeah, it's no, like eating something dodgy or getting
totally
getting a bit of an illness or something.
Yeah, all of the things.
Yeah. No, amazing. Well, yeah, that was good.
Great.
So we will do a little disclaimer. So anything that we say are our own opinions. They're not affiliated with where we work and shouldn't be taken as personal medical advice.
Yeah. So if you've enjoyed this episode, if you've learned something new, please do leave us a review wherever you get your podcast.
It might seem like a little thing, but leaving us a 5-star review pushes the podcast out to as many people as possible. We really want to break down barriers, bust myths, and give as good quality info as we can.
Yeah, and we want this episode and the whole podcast to reach as many people as possible. So if you want to be part of that ripple effect, then please hit the like button.
And make sure you're following us on all of our platforms at Between Two Ovaries and engaging with our socials. Thank you.